good.
Michael, I've heard a lot about Rust Belt Riders from Jonathan, our mutual friend. Just give me a little bit of the origin story and where you're at now in your company's growth and history.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really glad that Jonathan texted us. Happy to be talking with you today. So Rust Belt Riders was started 2014. Daniel Brown and myself are the two co-founders. And the company began as a solution to what we saw as actually a handful of problems. We saw being able to keep food waste out of landfills and build healthy soil for our community as a solution that would it was a high leverage solution for multiple problems. So a reasonable question is, what's the big deal with food waste going to landfills? If it's not something that's been on your radar, greenhouse gases, the total global greenhouse gas contribution, of that 8% of the total contribution is coming from emissions that are coming from landfills, from food waste going into those landfills, as well as from just inefficient transportation of food that gets thrown away. 40% of the food that's grown in the US is thrown into the garbage. So we're working on creative solutions to ensuring that we're keeping food waste out of landfills and then creating value-added products out of that food waste. So,
Hold on, let's just stop there for a second because
yeah.
8% of global emissions from landfills, mostly through methane, which is like 20 to 25 times, the contribution of CO2. And I just learned recently that it's like in the first 20 years, it's even more powerful. Like that's over a 100-year time frame. So like this is a, highly leveraged, and the food waste, how significant that is. So you're tackling a huge part. So for climate focused folks, this is a huge opportunity. And then now you're talking about the value-added products. I know in your business, you just started selling soil and it's going super well. Tell us a little
That's
about your
right.
product line and kind of what the how that's feeding into this kind of capital raise you're doing.
Yeah, so we really like to talk about we've all heard of vertical integration, but we really like to talk about cyclical integration as a way of kind of stacking the functions of the operation. We see a lot of benefits from the overlap of the different companies working with one another in that way. So the back-end product that we're making right now is we've got a few different soil blends that we make for several different applications. And all of those soil blends are made with a base of our living soil compost. So we make the compost in a really specific way. A lot of compost in the past has been made by throwing stuff into a giant pile, and after a certain amount of time, it turns into something that you can use. We're fortunate to be working with a really talented member of our team. Nathan Rutz is our director of soils. He studied under a number of the handful of soil blend microbiologists and soil scientists in the US, including Dr. Elaine Ingham and Dr. Fred Michel. So Nathan's constantly learning, and we've dialed in our composting production process to make a really high quality product. It's a compost that meets the National Organics Program standards, which means that it can be used on organic farms. And also because it's made to these standards, it can be used in other facilities that might have more strenuous regulations. So, for example, we work with a number of licensed cannabis operations, and some of those operations are kind certified, and those certifications also need a really refined, high quality soil and compost. So we make the compost to meet all those specifications, and then that compost is used in a blend to make anything from a blend that will start seeds, which we typically work with organic farmers on the seed starting mix. So that blend is called Sprout. And then we also have a blend called Grow. And Grow is formulated for filling raised beds. We have a lot of inquiries from folks that are doing raised bed gardens. They want to fill their raised beds. And then we have a house plant mix. So we're able to partner with a number of house plant shops. And that one's we've actually shipped to several states. To be able to provide a high quality potting mix for houseplants. And then the last one is Bloom, which is the product that we partner with the licensed cannabis facilities. And that is specifically formulated to enable the plant to grow from its sprouting stage all the way through flower with only water. We're also able to partner with different operations. Depending on how they grow their plants, they might need us to tweak the formula a little bit. So we tweak the formula to their needs. We've got a number of different amendments that we add to the compost to be able to provide whatever nutrients or properties that grower might need in the medium that they're using. So really great to have Nathan on board because he's able to speak to some of the more technical aspects and biological and chemical aspects of growing those plants. And that's not just for the licensed cannabis operations, it's also for all the farmers as well.
This is so cool. I love how you're blending kind of a waste company, you know, just picking up people's food waste. And I've been a part of a number of composting operations, seeing how they work. And then you're really making some huge value-added products here. So you've made it work past 7 years as a business, just mostly on the composting part. Now you're building more soil as a bigger part of growth revenue. So give us a sense of like, are you about $1 million in revenue today? Where are you revenue-wise? And where do you think that'll grow as you kind of continue to invest in these new product lines you just described?
Yeah, that's right. So when we first started, we were primarily a hauling company. We went up the chain to be able to get our hands on this food waste because we knew that really in the beginning, it's, and to this day, it's a lot about education, about reframing this food waste, which needs to no longer be viewed as a waste stream. Currently, the way that it's being handled is, as we said before, it's going to landfills where it's giving off methane emissions and contributing to greenhouse gases. And we need to start thinking about it as a resource. So this food waste is actually energy in the form of sunlight that has manifested itself in a form that we can eat. And we're going to throw it into a landfill where it's going to give off carbon emissions and exacerbate climate change. So it's a lot of reframing the food waste as a resource and then getting our hands on it. So that was the early part of the business. And that was where almost 99% of revenues were coming from. And so what we've done over the past 18 months, 2 years, we have really built out our infrastructure for being able to process that material. We were always bringing it to a composting facility, but we were partnering with another composting facility to make the compost, and they were selling that themselves. And so now we've been able to partner with that facility as we've done our own operating. We were working on them with a license agreement. We're making that compost ourselves now, using it to make the soil blend and then selling that. So up until about, I would say it last year was the first year we were actually doing our own soil blend and compost production. And that was even with the sales cycle of the different customers there. I really feel like that was really kind of testing the waters for us. So the next move is going to be really soil blend and compost production. But so far this year, we will have done $250,000 in revenue. And we're in the process of bringing on one of the local chain grocery stores here. So that's going to basically double the amount of food waste that we'll be picking up from the hauling partners. And that's going to be going to another facility that we've partnered with, where we're going to be overseeing the production there and making sure that it's made to our spec. We're going to have our team out there doing some of the work as well, but it's a way for us to scale without making the investment in all the infrastructure immediately. But the company will break $1 million for the first time this year, but it's also important to note that those revenues are going to be significantly more evenly split between the hauling and soil blend production parts of the company. And then we're going to see that hauling part of the company grow significantly next year. And we're timing that up with being able to grow the soil blend compost production end of things too. So there's an interesting relationship between the push and pull in the supply chain there. Because of that integration, but we're also very aware of the need to be able to find a market for just the compost. So should we need to just sell compost instead of really kind of hyper specialized soil blends, we're making sure that we focus on that, those sales as well. But yeah, we'll break $1 million this year. And in terms of the potential for growth, there are a lot of moving parts there. And that's one of the ongoing projects that we're going to have is keeping our ear to the ground in terms of what kind of developments are going to be made, both for the licensed cannabis operation, but also a lot of the changes that we're seeing in agriculture as more and more farms move towards regenerative agriculture. We do see there being significant demand for just that base compost for broadacre application by the hundreds of cubic yards here over the next few years as well. But
beautiful. What an incredible kind of recap. Maybe just give us a context on composting businesses, hauling businesses, since that'll continue to be a growing part of your operation. I know you're quite involved. Institute of Local Self-Reliance has some kind of circles. Tell us about kind of competitors, the state of the industry more broadly for folks that aren't familiar with kind of the hauling part.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that question. So we've been really fortunate to be working with the Institute for Self-Reliance basically since we've started. I'm on a steering committee for a coalition of composting companies. You can check it out on their website. They do a workshop annually. It's coupled with a forum called Cultivating Community Composting. And there are over 100 organizations just like ours, smaller scale, mission-driven, community-based organizations that are keeping food waste out of landfills and composting that material and then having it used as close to where it's being generated as possible. So that's also a really important component of that. I'm fortunate to be able to be on the steering committee there. And over the past, let's say 5 years, there's such a rich conference that brings together these organizations and several of them are co-ops. I believe there are 6 or 7 that are cooperatives. And that space is really, really collaborative. There's a listserv, an email that is very active. Folks are sharing. I mean, you can imagine this industry, there are a lot of weird questions that you might have. How do you clean your buckets? What are the best bags that you can use? What do you do when a pressure washer freezes in the winter? How do you get frozen food waste out of a 64-gallon container in Cleveland in the middle of February? How do you pop a vegetable sickle out of a giant garbage can? Those kinds of questions. So the community is really, really collaborative. And then a lot of those are newer organizations that are just getting going. So it's been really great to help those organizations not make the mistakes that other, some of us that have been doing it a little bit longer have had. And then I've been going to the U.S. Composting Council, the USCC conference since 2015. And the organizations that are larger that have been around for a longer time are really seeing the value of what these smaller organizations are doing in terms of grassroots movements in their communities. And I feel like some of them are a little slow to change and there's a little bit of tension there between, some of the cultural values of the newer companies coming on that are coming to the work from a lens of environmental justice, of basically overhauling systems that we've seen continue to reinforce different types of structural oppression. And it's just kind of a different culture in this group that are doing it from a community-based lens, as opposed to say waste management's division of organics recycling. And we're very fortunate to have some partners here regionally that we get along with pretty well. And we've been able to cultivate some great partnerships with the businesses that have been doing the work for a while. And we're grateful for that. So that's kind of the larger, so I'd be remiss to say that policy has a lot to do with what composting looks like in any given state or any given city. And one of the things that we're really proud of is that we're in Cleveland, we're a Midwestern city. We don't have progressive policy that's banning food waste from landfills because there are politicians that are enacting that policy. That's not happening like it does in places like the West Coast. We don't have that going on. We're also not the East Coast, where they're running out of space for landfills. They're literally running out of holes in the ground to throw things. So they need to start exploring other options because they don't have any other options. Here, we've got low tipping fees for landfills. It doesn't cost a whole lot to throw garbage or food waste into a hole in the ground. Yet, we've been able to find a market-driven solution to this problem because there are enough people here in our community that see politicians not acting in the interest of, say, our Great Lake that's close by. And we have decided to provide that solution for them. And we get, provide an opportunity for residents and businesses to be able to move forward with their environmental goals. So that's kind of the hyper-local version is. And I feel like if you can make it work in a market that doesn't have any distortions because of policy or anything like this, then we can really make it work anywhere. And we're really proud of that.
That's wonderful. Can you just quantify a little bit of, I guess two things. One, customer base. You have like three customers that are like 80% of the business, or like 100 customers. Give a sense of how much residential, commercial, and you mentioned that grocery chain that you're just bringing online that'll really help grow that part of the business. And then the second question is, you're in the process of converting to a co-op. Tell us about the cooperative piece.
Yeah. So in terms of customer breakdown, the monthly recurring revenue for the commercial hauling component of the business after the local chain is on board all the way is going to come in around 45,000 monthly recurring revenue. And of that 45K in MRR, that grocery store chain will be probably around between about 25% of that total. Maybe it's possible that could be a little more, but they're definitely going to be the largest customer we have. We also partner with a number of institutional partners, such as the Cleveland Clinic, University Hospitals. We really liked the Evergreen Cooperative there. Partnering with anchor institutions is a really important part of their model. We took a page out of that book really early on because we were definitely inspired by what Evergreen was doing. So that's the commercial breakdown into things. We're currently doing $30,000 a month in monthly recurring revenue for our residential services. And so we're not only keeping commercial food waste out of the landfill, we're also helping residents compost at home. And we do that through a curbside residential program where we drive to your house once a week, similar to traditional trash or recycling, except you've got one of our buckets and we come swap your bucket out for a clean one. There are 550 residential pickup subscribers currently. And those subscribers pay on average $32, $33 a month. But the MRR there is about $30,000 a month. And then for the total residential program, so that's the pickup subscribers. We also have a drop-off program where for $10 a month, you can bring your food scraps to a drop-off site that we conveniently locate, maybe in the park, or maybe it's at City Hall, or maybe it's at the library, and it's got some signage, and it's a big container with a lock on it. You can come bring your food scraps from home to that container. And so both of those programs combined is 30K in MRR. There are 1,500 drop-off subscribers and growing. We're drawing one new drop-off location almost every month. So that program's grown pretty quickly, and it'll be interesting to see what happens when it gets cold out, because people might want us to come to their house to pick up that food waste. So
but tell us about the co-op piece now. I want to hear about how'd you get there and move there, and then I know we've got to wrap up after that.
Yeah, okay. So the co-op piece, we've been working on amended bylaws for probably 18 months now. We're working with Jason Weiner out of Boulder, Colorado. I was really fortunate to be able to sit in on a co-op conversion. So there was a deal that the Evergreen Fund for Employee Ownership did. I got to be on the special counsel and have a front row seat to what it looked like to transition a typically owned company to worker ownership. So we've been building these bylaws with our entire team for about 18 months. We've literally going line by line, test driving different provisions, running different scenarios. But I think this is the formalization of being a co-op. And that's really, really important. But also from day one, we've always wanted this company to be worker run and worker owned. So we've been operating using transparent bookkeeping. We make decisions democratically. We work off of consensus. We've never had to actually bring anything to a hard vote because we've been able to meet and come to consensus on all the decisions. Personally, and Daniel as well, we wanted to build a place that how what we were doing was as important as what it is that we were doing. So we love what we're doing. It's important work. And we need to be doing it in a way that reflects a prefigurative model of how we want to exist in the future that we know is possible.
Oh my goodness, Michael, music to my ears here. Solidarity really embedded from all your practices with financial transparency, democratic decision-making. I mean, these are the hallmarks of kind of alternative leadership models that I think will be, you know, vital for our future. And you're now restructuring that on the governance and ownership level too. And as part of that, you're raising capital, and we'll kind of do a little bit on that in a second. Just to kind of close out this broader perspective, and then we'll turn to terms in a second piece here. Any kind of final words we didn't cover in this kind of brief overview of Rust Belt Riders? How can they buy soil? What's the best way to buy soil if I'm in North Carolina?
You can get soil at tiltsoil.com. And That's the soil blend component of the company. There'll be some links back to Rust Belt Riders if you're curious of checking out the Rust Belt Riders piece. But we see those as two interrelated companies. We had to distinguish them from one another. The company Rust Belt Riders comes from, we started on bicycles in 2014. We were hauling food waste on the back of a bicycle to the closest community garden. So a great question would be, why the heck do you sound like a motorcycle gang? And it's because we started the business on bicycles, and we kept the name because it shows our roots, and it's a nice story to tell.
Oh, beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Michael. Really appreciate it.